Hello, and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week marks the start of the second such campaign, and something of an experiment for us. So without further ado, welcome to episode zero of the Dice Punks playing retro-future cyberpunk game Hardwired Island. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hello, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Hecate, also known as Cato Burke, but, you know, try not to know me, especially if you're a cop.
Hello, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Officer Armitage, aka Big ACAB Energy.
I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Matchstick, whose other names are classified.
And I'm Nick. I will be playing Ing, who is an android and a drone operator.
Well, thanks, players. Before we get into it, let me take a moment to explain what it is we'll be doing this episode, as it's something we've not previously attempted. We're going to attempt to record and release, or at least most of, our session zero for Hardwired Island. Since this is a first and there's no script, we're not actually sure as of this recording if any of this is going to make it to air, and even if it does, who knows how much of it will be in any published episode. So come along for the ride. For those who might not have heard of it before, session zero is essentially a term for taking a pre-campaign game session to plan instead of play. It can include lots of things, depending on the group, the game, and the goal, but we'll be using this one to let our players have some say in the shape of things to come, to put some finishing touches on their characters, fit those characters into the world of the game, to connect them to one another and their neighbors, and just maybe, if there's time, start seeing a little of their exploits on Grand Cross. But of course, that requires me to explain a little bit about this Grand Cross thing I just brought up. We'll go into more detail in the course of this episode and in the preamble to episode one, but for now, imagine with me. It's the far future of 2020, and humanity has its first independent non-terrestrial nation in the space station metropolis of Grand Cross. Our player characters are among the regular people in that young city in the stars, and will be fighting for themselves and their communities against the exploitation and control of corrupt, amoral corporations and their paid-for politicians. They'll be doing that in mechanical terms by preparing for and carrying out missions, both ones that they cobble together themselves and ones that are given to them, should they choose to accept them. Actions that are high pressure, consequential, rushed, dangerous, or otherwise notable are attempted by rolling two six-sided dice, plus relevant bonuses and penalties, against either a fixed target number or another character's roll. One of the cool things about the system is the emphasis it puts on preparation, which earns characters a resource called prep that can be spent during a mission to help characters succeed in a variety of ways. Another interesting wrinkle the system has is to track the mood and circumstance of social situations, computer systems, and even combat arenas, changing how they need to be interacted with as the situation changes. So those are the broad strokes. But I'm going to turn to our players in just a moment for any outstanding questions they have on the theory that that will be useful to you, our listeners, as well. Chances are good that anything y'all are wondering will also be something our listeners could benefit from. So I know we've all had a look at the rules to greater or lesser degrees, and I've read through the rule book a couple of times in the past 18 months, but only one cover-to-cover pass through, and that was a while ago. So what, if anything, do we feel like we need to clarify for ourselves or our listeners?
Is there a mayor or governor of Grand Cross as a whole? My impression is that there's kind of a patchwork of industrial interests and corporate interests that have a lot of practical power. But is there a central governance or not?
There is. There is a central governance. And in fact, part of the reason that 2020 is a significant year for Grand Cross is that it is an election year. At the moment, a lot of control rests in the hands of the patchwork that you mentioned before, which is referred to offhandedly as the Off-World Cartel, a series of powerful, influential, but ever-shifting corporate interests and influential business people, CEOs, They back a particular political party, and it is amusing, if confusing, that one of the bits of satire in the setting is that the two most influential political parties on the station are called, in shorthand, Union and Unity, such that they are very easy to confuse, because Union is a rough analog for liberal capitalist parties, you know, preferable to the major alternative, but ill-equipped to solve a lot of the problems the station is actually facing. Unity is a business-controlled off-world cartel, not quite puppet, but certainly aligned, cartel-aligned organization that is very conservative when given free rein, but their talking points tend to represent themselves as more moderate. Now, it is Unity that has had control recently, but they were working to dismantle a system that was actually, by contemporary American standards at least, fairly progressive. Even though the initial state of politics on the station was working from the starting point of a bunch of, you know, social scientists and political scientists and, you know, sort of well-meaning experts getting together and drawing up governing documents, they weren't actually put into place until, you know, existing governments and corporate interests got their hands on them. But what went into place when the station first officially opened was a fair bit more progressive than Unity would like to see. So they've had one term in power, and a lot of the friction and turmoil on the station is due to the changes that they have made. You know, housing has become less generally available and more expensive, for instance. Policing has become more brutal, less accountable, things like that. And so whether or not Unity wins re-election this time is, you know, one of the things that's kind of at stake in 2020.
Thank you.
Good question.
Doesn't sound relevant at all to situations. The bad vibes of an election year. Mm-hmm. At least we're in space.
Right.
In space.
I think you mean
neoliberal malaise in space.
That may end up being, well, no, it's not punchy enough to be the name of the campaign, because I have to put that in the title of every episode. But
honestly, that would be such a good bit, though.
True. Yeah. True. So good question to start off with. There is a lot more to be said about on-station politics and governance, but I figured the broad strokes were best to address here. Any related or unrelated other questions from our players that might be helpful for you and or for our listeners?
So, possible wank question. Is it a first past the post voting system, or what's the...
I will have to double check if there's anything on that in the setting. I don't know that the voting system got a lot of ink, but I believe it to be at least not terribly dissimilar from major neoliberal voting systems currently.
Mm-hmm. Maybe two related questions. Mm-hmm. How expensive is it to travel to and from, this hardwired island? And related, how well monitored is travel? Is everybody that comes and goes mm-hmm. recorded?
The poorer you are, the more heavily monitored your travel to and from the station is. But this is also partially because it is relatively expensive to travel, and the fewer people and less cargo is traveling at once, of course, the more expensive it is. It's not as expensive as you might think, because there are other off-world platforms that are sort of permanent residences. There's a colony on the moon, for instance. There are other stations. Grand Cross is the only sort of independent city-state that is totally... spaceborne, I guess, for lack of a better word.
the logistics are that shipping happens pretty routinely. Individual transit is prohibitively expensive for most people on Earth and in Grand Cross, but a lot of the member nations of the Grand Cross project had and still have specific systems for who gets to go when, which often, depending on the country, includes being able to purchase passage as well as being able to enter a lottery for passage. There are, of course, as many variations as there are member countries, but those are sort of the two broad things that are usually available. A lot of people who are on Grand Cross currently, either they or their families managed to win a lottery. Some managed to rig a lottery, whether from the top down by being involved in politics and business or from the bottom up by being involved in crime. And then the other big category is if you were helping to build or furnish or organize the station, or indeed if your family was, then that was a ticket in and of itself. So like one group of people on the station are, for instance, the builders, people who helped build Grand Cross, essentially are some of the earliest of the station's version of property owners.
Okay.
I think that got both halves of your question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good deal.
How much of a sense do we have of what's going on Earth? My understanding of the setting is a meteor hit Earth or meteorite. And that's part of what kicked off like the space rush, as it were. And that's part of why Grand Cross exists, treaty, all that good stuff. But yeah, do we have a sense, or is this something that maybe gets revealed through play of like what's up on Earth in terms of government structure? Are the nations we know more or less intact-ish? Are things like very apocalyptic? Or do we not know if we're already here?
So that's a good question. And I have broad answers because the setting as given in the core book is deliberately vague on the details. Broadly speaking, the impact of this meteorite, asteroid, whatever scale it was at, was enough to begin a sort of cascading reordering of the global order. As well as to kick off this sort of space mania that kicked technology and space travel into overdrive in this alternate timeline. I and the rulebook have both made only a very few decisions on the concrete details of what that means. The rulebook very specifically does not state where the impact was. You know, that's kind of left as an exercise for the reader and thus for the GM. And I will cards on the table. I have not made a specific determination there, partially because by the time play begins, this is not nearly as apocalyptic of a state of things. There are certainly some countries that were more and less affected, and thus some that have had need for more and less recovery. And of those who needed recovery, there has been varying levels of recovery. As far as what you know about it, Earth and Grand Cross and space generally do share like an internet. It's not the kind of thing where most people can like go home for the holidays. You know, if you're not somebody who in our present day would own a yacht, then you're probably not traveling in that casual way. But, you know, video chatting from orbit to the Earth or to the moon or to other stations, perfectly normal, although I imagine the lag is not great. So like news and stuff is easy to come by, although the slowly emerging orbital culture of Grand Cross tends to use different like social media platforms and news sites and stuff than Earth does. Just like, you know, WhatsApp is more popular in the US and LINE is more popular in Japan.
No, that's helpful. That's helpful. I think I was kind of picturing like an information blackout about what's going on back on Earth. So yeah, that gives us a different flavor. That's good.
Yeah, I would say that on Grand Cross, you probably casually would be as aware of Earth goings on as any given person in the real world is of like non-domestic news. You know, I don't get local news from where y'all are, and I know even less about what's going on in Australia, but, you know, headlines still reach me. And that's kind of the way that, you know, Earth is a different country in a literal sense. You know, a series of different countries, obviously, but and then of course there's the language thing, right? You know, whatever news is out there is going to be more or less accessible depending on how it is communicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And also good to understand that, like, yeah, going back and forth is the domain of people with yachts or private jets or whatever. For most people, the trip is a one-way trip effectively, at least for a long time.
And I would say that it is, harder to do a round trip from Grand Cross to Earth and back than it is to do international airfare, but still, like, potentially within the grasp of, you know, somebody with like a stable income, you know, even if it's not a big one, you know, somebody on Grand Cross or on Earth for that matter, who would be able to take, like, you know, a particularly lavish vacation every once in a while, you know, instead of driving up to the mountains, you fly to the Mediterranean. That's kind of the frequency and scale that it is on.
So those mythical people who have burden zero.
Right. So this is actually another mechanic in the game is economic burden. Shortened to just burden. Player characters have to have a burden of between one and I believe four, though you can't start with more than three. And this is something that you roll with a penalty of when economic shocks hit and then suffer consequences accordingly. People who have burden zero are what we would effectively call, like, for the lack of a more technical term, like middle class. There's a joke from a really terrible movie from the early 2000s that, well, everybody thinks they're middle class, but in sort of a more technical lifestyle kind of way here in 2024, when we're recording this, the middle class is getting a lot smaller, you know, all the time, because it refers to things like, you know, having stable employment, property ownership, access to, you know, services that...
Having savings,
yeah. Investments and things like that. Somebody who achieves that level of prosperity would have burden zero. Having a negative burden is the sort of thing that people who, you know, own the insurance companies have. You know, and for our purposes, those people are going to mostly be either pretty far removed from our action or actively villains. You know, it is deliberately abstracted system, but we are operating in the vein of burden. And so maybe a good way to mechanically represent it is that purchasing a round trip from orbit to Earth and back would be the sort of thing that would increase your burden.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, it's less like a tech worker hopping on a plane, even if that means going into a little bit of credit card debt or whatever. And it's more like someone who makes, you know, leaves the country that they are from to go somewhere else to maybe send money home. They're not going back anytime soon. That was the, like, I was trying to get, like,
Intercontinental moving, I think.
Moving as opposed to like transit as opposed to travel, or immigration as opposed to travel.
Right.
Yeah.
And similarly, it is certainly possible for those people to return, but it is not easy or practical.
That's exactly what I was trying to get a sense of. Cool.
Yeah. All good questions so far. Any other system or setting questions that are weighing on our minds? I'm glad that almost everything we've asked so far is something that I can answer without having to consult the rule book. I thought I was going to be markering out a whole lot to be able to just go, like, do a find.
I mean, I think a great deal of the system will be answered for me in session, either this time or next, because... You know, if you put a gun to my head and said, explain combat to me, I would say, I would stall for time.
Goodbye. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So broadly speaking, right, there are four scenarios of hacking, schmoozing, punching, sneaking. There are a series of actions that have specific kind of roles associated with them, which would be roll 2 6-sided dice, add relevant specialties and bonuses for that particular move. Here are the kinds of outcomes you could get. Outside of those systems, it's just the same, but a little loosier and goosier, not terribly unlike the Unknown Armies mini campaign that we just finished up on. the main wrinkle there is that if you're schmoozing, hacking, or fighting, you have moods about, you know, whether it's like hostile or friendly or neutral, and there are a bunch of different kind of terms, and we'll get into it. My intention for covering the mechanics and letting our listeners understand what's going on is to give the broad strokes here and in the next episode, episode one, and then get into detail as we go. I don't want to do it so slowly that we as players develop bad habits vis-a-vis the mechanics, but I don't have a problem with incrementing the complexity upward. This is not AD&D levels of mechanical complexity by any stretch, but it is a degree more complex than almost anything we've played on the show so far. I guess, mechanically speaking, 10 million hit point planet, which I don't think has been released yet, is even simpler, but mathematically it involves quite a lot of arithmetic. And that's probably the closest level of complexity that we've gotten to so far for our player's reference.
What do you think is the most important thing for our listeners to know going into this more complicated system?
The cheeky answer is that I will probably be editing out a fair bit of me flipping through the book and us making sure that we're all on the same page as we get used to it, because it's been a long time since I've played in a system that requires kind of more crunch than... Than very little at all. I was going to compare it to maybe like this is a little bit more complex than D&D 3.5. In that it doesn't have a discrete skill list. It has specialties that can be more flexible, like Unknown Armies, but mechanics that are a little bit more conditional. That, I think, is going to be the big thing, is just remembering, oh, I have this trait that applies this thing in certain circumstances. And, you know, I'm going to do my best, but players, it'll be up to you a lot to be like, ooh, flag down the GM. I have this thing that kicks in here.
I will forget a lot of mine.
Yeah, and like I said,
reasons that I took traits that just gave me more specialties.
Perfectly fair.
And burden.
Specialties for our listeners are akin to skills in other systems. There are a variety of places they can come from, and if they're coming from different places, they can stack. Whereas if they're coming from the same place, they don't. And while we're on role mechanics, a boost refers to a bonus die, whereas advantage and disadvantage are taking the best, you know, 2 of 3, 2 of 4, worst 2 of 3, 2 of 4. And then there's also harm, whereas when you've taken damage, it penalizes you first by a flat number, and then as you suffer more serious harm by a die roll. So that's the quick and dirty version anyway.
So this could easily go into Dice Speaks, and feel free to let me know if we're going to put this off to that mm-hmm. time. But I do think that it kind of fits into session zero as well, to ask what excites you about this system or the idea of this kind of a game as a storyteller mm-hmm. and how we can help you to collaborate on that story or that vision. So what is the vibe, or what is the kernel that makes you feel awesome about the idea of doing this campaign?
I was not at all prepared to answer this question, but I think I can at least begin to do so with sort of two main things. First, I like that this is a very considered approach to cyberpunk. As much as I do like the, I have a laser katana and I cut the dude in half and then I stomp on the robot and it, you know, explodes into bolts, you know, like that's genuinely good fun. You know, I enjoy a lot of that stuff myself. But this is one that set out to specifically take the kind of punk part a little bit more seriously in a grounded way, and to try and represent people who were in a world where technology is distorting the sort of accepted fabric of society in ways that disproportionately advantage those who are wealthy, powerful, and acting in bad faith, and trying to use the tools at their disposal to fight back against that from the margins. And to that point, it eschews the common cyberpunk thing of becoming more machine than man, being like something that is threatening or dangerous. You know, the specific thing, I'm paraphrasing the rulebook pretty directly here. I don't have it in front of me, so if I use the exact words, then envision a footnote here. The idea is that, like, the problems that arise from being heavily augmented in this setting don't come from damage to your soul or being less human or whatever. They come from essentially suffering things like dysphoria or chronic, health or motor problems by being like not the owner of your own body. You know, if you work a job that quote unquote strongly encourages you to get a tool where your left hand used to be, you know, then that's alienating and horrifying, especially if you then lose that job or lose access to that augment because the company that provided it stopped supporting it or went out of business or changed their software or license or whatever. Those are the real problems. It's an element that may or may not come up very much in play, but the idea that augmentations can like drive you crazy exists in this setting, and it's explicitly a smear campaign by corporate interests against a woman who's essentially was an early augment / disability activist who caused problems for them, and you know, they sort of tobacco instituted together this idea that it was the augmentations made her crazy. And that's the only reason she was doing all this, you know, rabble rousing and activism and stuff. And so that's just like straight up a propagandistic lie in this setting. But it is still a real problem, right? If you suffered an industrial accident and the workers' comp covered a really bare bones set of prosthetics that don't feel like you, or a really purpose-built set of prosthetics that were designed to make you better at a job that you didn't consider part of your identity. So augments of a certain kind will contribute to your burden, but they don't make you have to like roll to hold on to your soul or whatever. They are an opportunity for prosthesis and for accessibility and for self-expression. But they're an opportunity that has also been seized by corporate interests, you know, to serve inhumane ends in a way that is problematic for people. And that leads into the other thing that really made me like this kind of thing when I was reading about it, which is that, you know, this is not necessarily a game where the end game is you're going to overthrow capitalism or destroy the entire off-world cartel, but that you can make things better for people around you. And at the outside, at the end of a campaign or a power curve, really make trouble for the powers that be in a way that could maybe, I don't know, cost them an election. And so it's really sort of grounded in the idea of like community mutual aid, direct action in a way that feels a lot more worthy of the like cyberpunk label than a lot of the kind of post Matrix fast follows and kind of lazy cash grabs, that were mostly about just kind of putting neon on action film tropes and calling it a day. You know, this is not a setting that is going to have a lot of out and out violence in it, because if you cut somebody in half in the middle of the road, you're going to get arrested and thrown in solitary confinement by by a corporate controlled government who does not care how bad that is, or how justified your actions may have been. but it is a setting in which violence by the powerful is relatively commonplace and becoming more so. And so violence in response is on the table, you know, but in sort of a more grounded and measured way. It's also, you know, not going to be quite as much of like a neo-noir story as like Shadowrun Returns, you know, plot kind of was, if anybody has played that particular CRPG, but that has a lot of the same kind of, oh, somebody with more money than sense got involved in something and we can unravel it some. You know, it takes a lot of the things about cyberpunk that are cool and tries to relate them to the themes of the world that we exist in a way that might be relevant to people who are feeling, you know, powerless and exploited. In that way, it is a power fantasy. Mm-hmm. You're in a small enough fish tank that you can individually have an impact, but by doing a lot of the same things that collectively would have an impact in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That helps. And so it sounds like we could collaborate in that by taking the stakes at the level that we're operating seriously and bringing a kind of humanity to the inhumanity, mm-hmm. that between, you know, the clash between those two kind of highlights, mm-hmm. You know, that this is, humanity is not absent from this system. It's deliberately kind of suppressed by the system, using mm-hmm. those two words and, you know, that word in two different ways. Mm-hmm.
Well, and
yeah, there you go.
If I can wax a little bit,
you
anytime.
Yeah, dude.
One of the things that I should have seen that coming. I don't know why I didn't. One of the things that really got to me about this is that this idea of like Grand Cross being sort of a fresh start and an opportunity to experiment really resonated with me, like, because it was co-opted almost immediately, but not completely, right? It's not a fatally compromised system. It had some promise that was always kind of a long shot, but it managed to hold on to some of it, even as money and, you know, kind of various, what we might call like not pro-social, I guess, forces started to meddle. And I don't want to, I guess, be like too, I don't know, make myself like too Googleable here or whatever, but I was in the city of New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina rolled in, and I remember a lot of the discussion from people who were able to evacuate or who lived in the surrounding areas but weren't as directly affected being, oh, well, this would be like a really good fresh start. Maybe this is an opportunity, right, to make things better in kind of a radical way. And this was coming from people whose ideas of what would be better both lined up with mine quite well and were totally opposed to what my ideas were for what would be better. And it's been interesting in the last 18 and a half years to see the ways, see the ways in which that promise of being able to take a moment of crisis and of tragedy and try to make good on the opportunities that it presented have and have not panned out. And this is, the setting offers a post-disaster, not in Grand Cross, but in a different, similar sort of orbital habitat, as well as sort of that moment of flux where there's something new and different on the table, and presents a lot of the problems that ended up being problems, you know, in the, you know, sort of post-Katrina era of New Orleans, in a way that I think for me is going to be interesting to sort of work out, process, relitigate, and also sort of what if and even fantasize about, you know. I'll make this the last bit because I don't want to hijack this whole thing into some other bit about my biography, but like, there were non and anti-capitalist efforts and organizations in the wake of Hurricane Katrina that did a lot and found various levels of purchase and have various legacies in the city. And, you know, I was not amazingly heavily involved or anything. I don't want to like steal valor here. You know, I did some volunteer work a couple of times, you know, but it is an interesting question to ask, you know, well, what if, or how could it, you know, have gone? And so this combines a thing that has kind of been on my mind for the better part of two decades in a real world sense with a sort of fictional and fantastical milieu that I find really interesting. And it's, you know, in the book that it draws inspiration from a bunch of stuff that I really enjoy as a saxophone player. Who would I be if I didn't love Cowboy Bebop? You know, and
I don't want to know.
That version of me does have a LinkedIn, unlike the real life version of me. So, you know, that's kind of in the background of how I am perceiving this. I will show my hand a little bit. I have a GM only spreadsheet of primarily pun-based NPCs that I've been putting together, not because they're involved in any larger plot, but because I just want them to be around, you know, and that idea of like, look at this group of weirdos is kind of central to how I imagine things going. And I emphasize that word because one only needs to look back at how Nightfall went to know that how I imagine things doesn't necessarily have a whole lot to do with how they actually go. So that went on a long time.
I have no idea what you're referring to.
Uh-huh.
Me neither. Can't think of an example. Can't think of an example of you dangling a plot possibility in front of someone thinking, surely he won't do this incredibly strange thing, and then...
And then the course of the campaign was altered.
Yeah,
in 45 that is a thing. Of sidecoms.
Also,
I know that's not the sole example, of course.
Just the way I imagined Romnet fitting into that campaign versus how Romnet actually fit into that campaign. Totally night and day.
If we could linger for a second, though, like I think this idea of like Hardwired Island is a space to work out possibility. Like you know, assuming our listeners are more than 5 or 6 years old, which I assume they are. We all have. If one, I would. I also not hope.
That is. This is not suited.
I mean, it's not appropriate for adults either.
You extremely cool toddler. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, if you are 3 years old and listening to this, I want to talk to you in 15 years and see how you turned
out. Seriously.
Continue, Drew.
Presumably, even those who do not remember Hurricane Katrina remember the COVID pandemic, right? Other moments where the war or the Occupy movement, mm-hmm. right? If they're a little bit older than that, or, you know, like
Arab Spring
stuff for me would. Yeah, Arab Spring, totally. Moments where the world had the possibility to be very different, maybe better, maybe worse. And I think like some of the forces that end up acting on that are like people's fierce fear of radical change, people's bone deep desire to go back to normal, the forces of like the people with negative economic burden wanting to maintain the system that got them there. And I think the idea of going into space where the fishbowl or the pond or whatever is small enough that it is more like a fresh start, that there is no normal to go back to, is really appealing. It's like a way to work that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
It personally makes me very excited for what's ahead of us.
Totally, totally.
Hope that, I can live up to that.
That, and if it ever did come to any sort of war, we'd be at the top of the gravity well, not the bottom.
We have the high ground.
There are treaties about orbital weapons. I read that much of the book. I should say, for assuming there are listeners listening to this, there are parts of the book that I think the other players were told not to read. So I did not read those. But I read, I think, the rest of it over the past, you know, however long we've been planning this. I'll probably refresh myself before we get started.
If it does come to revolution, we could in fact use those with negative economic burden as, ballast.
Well, I will say this. I don't imagine it coming to like all out like French Revolution level revolution. But also, if that's the direction that things develop, I'm not going to forcibly force it out of that rut. You know,
I said that extremely tongue in cheekly. But
sure, I understand that. I just was on the level of establishing I have created expectations. A
character who literally identifies as a problem.
Yeah.
Pronouns are oh and no. yeah, I think. And I guess the sense I have is that if there's revolution in this setting, the point of like the scale is that we're not leading it, even if we're participating in it, right?
Well, in a practical sense, right, that there is an inherent problem with like out and out revolution on Grand Cross, in that all of the treaty nations on Earth are going to oppose it. And the orbital location may help with that, but there isn't a really good solution to if two or three large militarized countries decide to just blow the whole thing to hell, you know, like, so there, that's not a good reason not to push for change or even rapid change or even radical change. But in the sense of like, we killed our overlords and we're doing what we want, you know, yes, Grand Cross is an independent astral country, but no, it is not able to exist without its member nations in the treaty, the Lagrange Treaty, I think is what it's called. You know, there is an interdependence there at this point that would prevent the sort of like directly antagonistic, you know, the idea of being able to do the French Revolution in space and invade Belgium and Austria is pretty far-fetched.
Sure.
If I remember correctly, the population of Grand Cross is like 2.5 million, which is incredible for an orbital station. But on the level of a country, not very large.
No.
That was part of the reason I was asking about the Earth stuff,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's approximately San Francisco in space.
And San Francisco in space could take over the world. The San Francisco metro area could take over the world if there's enough of a power vacuum on it. But if Earth is intact-ish, then not so much.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, one of the interesting things about Grand Cross is that there's not much of like a metro area, right? Things do get sparser towards what the quote unquote back of the station, but it is all dense urban area all the time. There are cars and motorcycles and things, but a lot more people walk or use trains.
I love that contrast between like the neighborhood or the, you know, the municipality, the prefecture scale of things versus being in space. Like that's cool. That's cool as hell.
It is really cool. I really like this setting.
Me too. Yeah. Although it is intimidating in its size and detail, and it will take me a while. Yes. I will be doing a lot of looking things up, you know, as we really get into it. Are there any other system or setting questions? I feel like it's approaching.
I had one.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of backgrounds, which I think we'll talk about when we get into characters. But two of them are Crosser and Double Crosser, right? Like, when did you get to Grand Cross? So regardless of whether we selected those backgrounds, just given the length of time Grand Cross has existed, we would all sort of have to be either Crossers or Double Crossers, right? Like, we still have to decide when we arrived or, you know, how old we were when we did.
You've basically got three options. Builder, you were there before the station officially opened, whether you were a construction worker or not. You know, you were there while it was being constructed, finished, you know, before it like officially in giant quotation marks, like became operational. Crosser, which is, you know, you had an adult life on Earth and you relocated to space, however, and for whatever reason. And then Double Crosser would be folks who arrived as not adults for the most part, or very young adults, right? Anybody who was born on Grand Cross is going to be under 8 years old, if my memory serves, which is to say there aren't a lot of people who were born on Grand Cross. They're just unlikely to be player characters, you know, but if you came over at 12, you could easily be a young adult, you know, for 2020. And so that would make you a Double Crosser.
Got it.
And then the other big category is refugees. We haven't talked about the L4 disaster. We probably won't get into it too much, but there was another sort of city scale space habitat that was being built and that had a lot of people on it. And there was a catastrophic explosion, a whole disaster. Nobody could live there anymore. A lot of people died, and the people who didn't went to a few places, but a lot of them came to Grand Cross. And so that would be sort of the other big category of people who are on the station, is people who survived the L4 disaster. Yeah. I feel like we've spent a decent amount of time and certainly a ton of me yammering on setting and system, which is no bad thing.
Correct. Yammering is no bad thing.
I will.
I would listen to a whole show of you yammering.
I will at this point say, let's do our kind of last call for system and setting questions for now. We'll have plenty of time to get into more. Well, if that's all we have about setting and system for now, I'm sure we'll get more into it during the early episodes, but we'll move on to a critically important, but likely at least partially off-air part of any pre-campaign discussion: content and safety. We'll air as much of this as we feel comfortable with, which may end up being none of it, but I wanted to highlight it here for our listeners all the same, especially those who may not have participated in tabletop gaming before, or who maybe have played without having a discussion of all participants' comfort and safety. Goodness knows I did a lot of my earlier GMing without any such conversation, and while it was fine sometimes, at others I could have benefited from this step. So, the idea in this stage is to try to let players volunteer the things that, if they come up in the campaign, are likely to detract from their enjoyment. Generally, I find it useful to tackle these on essentially four levels, which is a little more granular than a lot of people go, and that's fine. So the levels are that something is totally fine, go ahead, no reservations, or maybe leave it in, but let's not get overly in-depth. Or it can be present, but let's leave it almost entirely off-screen, so to speak, and deal with it through bare mentions, allusions, gestures, implications, euphemisms, that sort of thing, and move on from it quickly. And then the fourth level would be, please don't have this in the game at all. So, having given that little overview, at this point, it is possible, listeners, that you jump directly to the next section, but there's also a possibility that some of what follows remains in. So, here is where that divide would happen. So, players, some of the things that I anticipate being present in this campaign due to setting my own foibles are things like general bigotry. You know, one of the things in Grand Cross is that fascistic-ish, you know, movements are getting some support, both financially and more broadly in sort of culture and media, from conservative elements and corporate money. So there could be even bigoted violence in the campaign. Dysphoria is also a possibility, not necessarily as a main plot point, but just because some people have, you know, augments that they maybe didn't ask for or don't like, or affect them in a negative way, but also, you know, due to the aforementioned bigotry, there are pressures coming from multivalent sources. Poverty's definitely going to be in there, and a lot of the things that come with it. Political violence is almost certain to make an appearance, possibly in a variety of ways. There is the possibility, though not the guarantee, of a variety of medical stuff. This could be anywhere on a large sliding scale, from just some descriptions of like riot medicine all the way down to, probably I wouldn't go into a ton of detail, but the presence of medical abuse or even torture, though that's not a guarantee and I certainly wouldn't dwell on it. Almost certainly to be some light body horror here and there, honestly, if I'm
because really, it's an Adam game.
Yeah, if I'm really, you know, honest with myself, body horror is a thing that just shows up in most of my games, but also there are some places where, looking ahead, I can see where it will be a reasonably significant part of the plot, even if I don't necessarily go into a huge amount of detail. On the lighter side, there's probably some light sexiness here or there. But again, yes. I don't anticipate putting out there for broadcast anything pornographic, but, you know, we'll probably do a first couple of seconds slow pan to curtains if I'm left to my own devices. And then there is the possibility, though not the plan, for substance use and or abuse at times. Those are the ones that I came up with, and if there's anything that anybody would like to say about where they would like it to be present in the campaign from that list, I'm all ears. If there's anything that you, given your character or given your understanding of the setting, would like to add to that list or just flag for me and your fellow players as something you might be concerned about, this is a good time to do it.
I think this is a good opportunity to segue into not like changing the subject, but talking about some of the subjects that may be covered in my post-content stuff. Like for Nightfall, I had Lissa's lines. Because my character is campus security, I figured we would do announcements in their flavor that align with what a lot of the emails that Adam and I received from a unnamed institution about security concerns on campus and the bogus information therein covered. Namely, some references to avoiding sexual assault as often portrayed by universities. I would say that the actual action should and will stay off air, at least in my content. And there will be some righteous anger in response to what most universities have to say on the matter from my character. But I wanted to make sure that my fellow punks are completely comfortable with that being a thing that gets brought up, not immediately, but down the line.
That's a really good point.
I've been thinking too about like what my stinger might be, and I was thinking like taking inventory of textbooks, which that it makes sense to people listening. It'll make sense to you listening if you're listening in a sec, because that's, you know, that's to do with my job. But you know, the thought there was to do, you know, sort of satire and stuff as well. You know, maybe not initially as toothy as what you're describing, Robin. But all that to say, I think like if we're talking about campus life, I think this is like not just good stuff, but important stuff to bring up from my perspective. I am comfortable with you including what you're describing. I would prefer that, you know, what is being alluded to remains alluded to as opposed to directly depicted. I think we're all on the same page there.
I think, you know, this is already, I suspect, generally known, but in terms of violence or body horror type things, damage around the eyes, not my favorite. Please do not have that. Thanks.
Yeah, is known, but I have also made a note of it.
Yeah. I think it's wonderful to kind of like share this on air too, because we have had discussions about Dez, your feeling about damage to eye parts and my feelings about weird teeth things going on. And I also think we're all in alignment on in terms of the topics of essay. Maybe alluded to, but there will be righteous anger on how that dialogue is often crafted.
Well, and you're in luck, Robin, because teeth and fingernails are some of my weird buttons, so I'm unlikely, even without thinking consciously about it, I'm unlikely to go there beyond just general mention myself, just from inclination. But I appreciate the reinforcement, Dez, on your thing with eyes, too, because, like, I get it. And I wouldn't have forgotten it necessarily, but yeah, good to have on air and good to have noted down explicitly.
I think that I would prefer that torture be a 4 or be a 3. Because, you know, that gets awful bad, awful quick.
Right. Yeah. And I think this is a good opportunity to, I think this is a good opportunity to just get on the books too, right? When we talk about all this content stuff, I think Drew did a really good job when we were doing Meat Punks of getting at this point that we're not doing any of this to be edgy or lurid or sensational. Mm-hmm. So the things that do appear are in order to engage with the reality sounds weird because what we're doing is decidedly not reality, but to engage with a thing that does exist, but not, you know, to do the thing of like,
how edgy can we be?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out a way to say something other than not to do the Song of Ice and Fire thing, because I know a lot of people like those books.
No, I think that's exactly it.
But I fucking hate them.
Intended.
And yeah, so like, yeah, my goal is that whatever comes up, it's not to be like, look how fucked up this thing is. Aren't you just transfixed by it? But rather to handle the fact that sometimes people are awful to other people, and how can you respond? You know, the one of the things that drew me to the system was sort of the setting and the themes. And so, you know, I am interested in engaging with those things, but not as, you know, 19th century carnival sideshow fodder. Right. I think we're going to try to be relatively compassionate in how we engage with any of this stuff. Whether we succeed or not, of course, is not for us to say. But we will be trying. And
yeah, I think the saying is always write what you know. So a lot of the thinking with how I approach my characters is just that, drawing from personal experience, both the good and the bad, to kind of inform their emotional direction and development throughout the campaign. Obviously, I'm a far cry from any sort of relation to police work or security right. work, but my history has kept me rather close to where those figures get involved on campus life. And so that was kind of the draw to creating this particular character, is covering some of those topics in a way that will allow them to develop throughout the course of the campaign.
Right. Yeah. Well said.
Very. Yeah. And I think for me, yeah, just to reinforce what Robin's saying, like, tone is really important, right? Like, there's almost nothing for me that is a level 4 across the board. Or to put it differently, there's nothing that wouldn't be okay at a level 3 if there's a clear point to it, right? If there's like a satirical or a narrative or a thematic point being made, you know, not dwelling on the more like lurid or awful aspects of it, totally on board with that, and in no way trying to like edge us closer to being edgy. But I think that's part of the level of trust, you know, for anybody listening who's never done a session zero, it's understanding that we're wielding this stuff responsibly, for lack of a better term.
And I feel comfortable enough with this group knowing that if those topics were to be broached, there would be conversations. You guys might reach out.
Right.
I might reach out to you.
Totally.
Because we've all gamed with each other, with the exception of Drew and Robin at Nick in various combinations for years now.
One, and towards our listeners too, you know, I trust that my players will say something. You know, if I am herring off in a direction that they don't like, I expect to be flagged down and to drop a marker on the recording timeline and have a discussion and then come back in a way that works. Which is part of the point of this discussion, is to head those things off of the past. But like, if we didn't think of something ahead of time, or if my idea of like a level 3, like, you know, have it happen off screen, deal with it through illusions and stuff, is not sufficiently abstract, you know, I feel like everybody involved, I trust to tell me that I'm, you know, doing too much, so to speak. No, and again, I have 25 years now at various frequencies of sometimes screwing that up to try to draw on to prevent it, but you know, I can't guarantee 100% success rate there either. So I think we all count on each other in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, and I think what Robin said is super important, right? Like if there's something that we need to check in about at a given beat in the story for a given episode, whatever, that's always fair game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So this is rewinding a bit into body horror. I feel very comfortable with all kinds of body horror. And so there's not really going to be any limitations on my side. So I will just be mindful of titrating my own response to those specific limitations that were put out there. In terms of other kinds of boundaries or veils, you know, I feel like there's just a few things that would make me have a little bit less fun, but aren't going to be traumatizing for me. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, you know, particular kinds of mental health struggles I've mentioned, I think, off air before, you know, realistic portrayals of eating disorders, especially if those are graphic, you know, and that person feels really kind of out of control with the eating disorder and wasting away and dying. That's not going to be a fun time for me. Mm-hmm. That said, it's not going to be traumatizing. So if it accidentally comes up, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Same thing with other kinds of situations. I think that, you know, there are compelling stories to be told when it comes to mental health struggles. And those are important stories. And so just, you know, being mindful that I think for me, those, the more realistic the and compelling the portrayal of mental health struggles, the more important it would be to my sense of fun to feel like there is something that can be done about this and, you know, that there is a path outward. And I think that also touches broadly on other aspects of fun for me. You know, if they're like, I'm fine with some degree of, you know, bigotry or oppression or other kinds of things that are important themes, I think, of, you know, Hardwired Island. But the more extreme or realistic or concrete those kinds of portrayals get, the more important it would be that there is something that can be done. You know, that this isn't the end of the story. This is the problem that's been thrown in our way for us to overcome or do something about or save this person or find some way to fight back against this system of depression, of oppression rather, and other kinds of things like that, you know, that there is an outlet whenever things are getting very close to that. Wow. You know, this is really a terrible thing going on. And if the answer to that is like, yeah, there's nothing that can be done. This person's just going to suffer and die. Less fun if it's a very concrete thing where we know this person and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, four for me is radical centrism, I guess, right? We can't, it cannot be that the world is like this and it sucks, but there's no other way the world could be, right? That's not quite what you're saying, but that,
I think so.
I absolutely agree.
Well, so, yeah. In both cases, I have good news about the way the system is constructed.
I guess radical centrism is still a three for me because it's okay for a character to have that point of view, right? It's just that like it's the text shouldn't think that overall.
Yeah, well, and the idea, the motive idea behind the whole of Hardwired Island is that while you may not be able to solve everything in a stroke, that there are things you can do. In the broad, to Drew's point, and in the narrow, to Nick's point, I imagine, and I guess to tip my hand a little bit to my listeners and especially my players, probably the instantiation of Apatia in this particular setting is going to touch on some mental health struggles. But I think I can say with some conviction that, like, yeah, that there's nothing inevitable isn't exactly the word, but you know, there's nothing that would be untouchable about the situation there. You know, that you know, part of what I hope to be able to do, and this is me having some anxiety about my limitations as a GM, is to be able to bring across that, like, somebody can have profound struggles, mental health or otherwise, and still be like a member, even a valuable, even a beloved member of a particular community. you know, and even a necessary piece of the tapestry.
This was kind of a core theme of Nightfall, actually.
Yeah.
A core theme of maybe at least my own existence. I don't want to speak for others, but
right, yeah.
We've mentioned that we're mental health travelers.
It's relevant.
I have introduced our people to the term neurospicing.
Yes. It's great.
I do appreciate that.
I just hope that my neurospice is chili crisp oil.
I need to check that out. I am a fan of spice.
To the degree that I can claim the label, I think it's pretty clear that my neurospicy is Tony Sachery's.
Oh, I'm here for that too. To kind of circle back to go on, Des.
Oh, I was just going to quickly point out that while the genre of the game is cyberpunk, the mechanics of it are hope punk.
I love that. And to kind of circle around back to talking about limitations, Nick is equipped with one big secret of my characters. And as may be expected from that circumstance, there's a fair bit of mental struggles built into my character as they currently stand. So I'll be sure to kind of check in with you and make sure that's okay. But I will stress that the trajectory in which I am aiming them currently is one of hope as well.
Everything that's been shared with me so far is totally fine by me. And I also want to invite Adam and the other storytellers, just speaking to my own sense of comfort and experience, I wouldn't want anyone to start with being too cautious around anything that I've named. In fact, just the opposite. You know, embrace drama, take risks, and I will let you know either during, if it's really serious, or after a session, like, hey, that didn't feel quite as fun as I wanted it to, and here's the ways that I could have more fun. Please don't start by curbing yourself. If anything, you know, lean into the things that are dramatically appropriate, and I'll let you know.
I really appreciate hearing that, because I'm a firm believer that having these kinds of clear boundaries, you know, lines, veils, whatever, is a way to get to the real shit. It's not a way to water it down. It's a way to make it more meaningful, because you know how to get to that stuff in a you know.
Right. Yeah. Usually you don't have safe words when you're about to have vanilla sex.
As well put. Yeah.
I feel like that needs to be an embroidery thing.
Stitch that on a sandwich. Right. Yeah. And I know where that pillow goes too.
Well, and my attitude too would be that, like, you know, because this is an environment of trust, my expectation, of course, would be that we would all err relatively on the side of caution. And if we had a blind spot, we would be told about it, you know, and I think that helps us vis-a-vis our listeners as well, you know, because the goal of all of this is to make sure that everybody involved, players first order and then listeners second order, are having fun, you know. So I think that we are a fairly high trust group of people among one another. And I think that hasn't gone awry for us so far, which is great. And I don't anticipate that it will. So, you know, I kind of
love you guys.
Me too.
Love you too.
Each and every one of you. And so I feel like that gives us a good, strong platform to go off of. And so, yeah, certainly, I guess and maybe this is a wrap up to the session. Maybe it's not. This is a wrap up to the section. Maybe it's not. But that I trust everybody here to flag us down if we're doing something that is diminishing your fun in a way that needs to be addressed immediately. And I trust everybody to bring it up after the fact if it is not urgent, but something you want to bring up.
I will say that. And this is a change in topic.
Sure.
But I am slightly sad about the fact that I made a character that I cannot aggressively throw in a patient's direction after the confirmation that she will yet again be appearing in this film.
I mean, I think that Adam has at this point stated that she is misappearing in every film.
Oh, yes. I must, I think... My decision to make a character I couldn't launch at her was intentional. However, I hate myself for it. Oh, yes.
Tragic, but necessary.
The framed art of a
my lady.
The framed art of Apatia just appeared on Adam's screen.
Which means it was at arm's length the whole time, as it should be.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I
think I was looking away during that, which is tragic, but fixable.
You've seen the
your loss.
Yeah, yeah, your loss indeed.
Damn.
I do not guarantee that Apatia's role in every campaign will be substantial, but I do guarantee that she will have at least a cameo's level of screen time going forward until I announce otherwise.
Don't you dare announce otherwise. That's a 4 for me.
All right. Good to know. Well,
a 4 is the lack of a Apatia. Don't even allude to that.
So I guess then that where we are currently is first me asking if there's anything else in terms of content and safety that we wanted to bring up.
I think sort of similar to Nick's point of ensuring that for shitty things there is no presentation of them as the eternal and unchangeable status quo. I would also not really like to see abusive relationships that will begin and end in that fashion.
Good to hear and know. And I guess for the record, I am unlikely to present something like that knowingly, but it is good to know to keep
that, an
eye out for things unknowingly.
Yeah.
I appreciate the flagging of it.
How do you feel about light extortion? Or exploitation.
Extortion.
Are you extorting the light spectrum? Or?
I was going to say, you've played alongside Des before. You know what his answer to this is going to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Hello, I play slightly malevolent face characters.
Well, what class are you rolling? Extortion.
Hacker, yes.
Yeah.
Hacker. Yeah, exactly.
Is there any part of this that anybody would like not to air?
I'm comfortable with everything.
Same.
Okay. That
So I think next our goal is to sort of make sure our characters are where we envision them and connecting how we envision them to connect. So we had brief introductions at the beginning of the session, and I don't want to get into like the, you know, session one, here is the official introduction stuff, but to the degree that you want to share with each other and our listeners things about your characters, and especially ask questions of your fellow players about decisions you should make, or interweave your characters into each other's lives or into a similar milieu, this would be the time to do it. You know, maybe a brief summary is in order in some cases, but I kind of leave this mostly in our players' hands.
It is worth noting, and I'm being deliberately obscure here for the listeners, sorry, not sorry, that while my character sheet does list a realmost name, Hecate is, or Cato, I suppose, is going to know my fake ID name as well as my handle, and the rest of y'all probably just know my handle.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Because you mark you are my employer, is... even if you're not aware that you're also my father figure.
how aware I am of that is absolutely something we will work out through play.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah. Yes, because, you know, for the listener and also I think for other players, if we've talked about this, all of us, then it's been a while. And I think if we did, it was pre-Nick joining the group. So thanks for joining the party, Nick.
Yeah.
The party in the having fun sense and in the RPG sense. So I, Cato Burke, hacker / criminal named Hecate, run a campus bookstore called The Frontispiece, which is hiding in plain sight and is a front. I don't expect to get caught. And that is where that is where I suppose I should call you Luke. That is where Des lives, is in the back room of The Frontispiece.
So two of you have a pretty close connection.
We do, mm-hmm. yeah.
And are tied in with Grand Cross Polytechnic, or GPOL, is the institution yes. there.
Mm-hmm. And that is also where you're a campus cop, right, Robin? Or mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm easily bought out, so I'm sure that you both have passed me a fair few funds to look the other way when necessary, which is our connection. Yes.
Most definitely. Mm. I think it's maybe up to you and Dez how much you two have actually interacted, but you and I have definitely interacted. And whether he's
probably
hidden
I
in
just
the back,
sort of yeah. fade into the back of the frontispiece as
sure,
necessary.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and whether I've had to slip you a few extra bills, credits? Have we talked about currency on Grand Cross? Whatever they are.
Mm-hmm. We haven't, but we'll get to it when we hit play, so to speak.
But yeah, if the payment has increased slightly for you to ignore the semi-feral person living in the back, that would only make sense and be a
You're
good
so generous in your description of me, Drew.
So Nick and I agreed that our characters are roommates.
Oh my god, nice. They were roommates.
They were roommates.
Get ready,
I'll leave it to Nick how much or little to reveal of that dynamic.
Yeah, I would also put out there that one possible connection with the store and with the other characters, other than Robin's character, is so if we start Ing's story with his or their arrival on Grand Cross, they arrived without much in the way of resources and looking for perhaps a fake ID or other kinds of things that would help with a not entirely legal survival on Grand Cross. Mm-hmm. And if there were some way for them to have found out that your store is a front for other kinds of things, that might have been a useful connection for
Sounds
acquiring
like
some of the early
have.
Resources that, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So, hey, let me introduce this being, you know, they need some things, you know,
That's
some
great.
Drone parts.
This, the student. mm-hmm.
Yes.
Ah,
so,
a student, you say.
So this is another world building thing, something we would all know that I don't know. Can androids enroll at GPOL?
I see no reason why they couldn't.
Okay.
They might have
cool.
to pay
so
some
you could plausibly
administrative fees.
Sure, sure. Equal on paper, sure. okay, no, that all makes sense as connective mm-hmm. tissue for sure. And part of the richness of the relationship between Ing and Kato could be that, like, Kato is a basically modular person, not an android, but has undergone a full body prosthetic and switches out parts a lot.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, pieces and replacements and prejudices are all things we could talk about.
Yeah. Okay. So Kato's got a meat brain, but android other
parts. Well, exactly. Meat brain, but less and less other meat.
Parts. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cal has less and less other meat, though not through their preference, but through necessity.
It sounds then like I am the most meat.
I believe
I
so.
I think you're the meatiest of the bunch. Yeah.
The meatiest.
Yes.
With my legally
and your characters
from Luke Skywalker hand.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's beginner stuff on Grand Cross.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, it's intended as such and, you know, factors into backstory. Yeah.
And I'll mention the two of you because, oh yeah, go for it, please.
One thing I really liked about this system is that medical prostheses are free.
Oh, good God.
So you could build the cyberpunk person of your dreams.
Medical totally. And cosmetic prostheses. If they don't have specific mechanical effects, then you don't have to pay for them at character generation.
Yeah, that's
great. Now, I will say two that I did pay for are Kato's arms. Right. And again, this is something that would be immediately visually obvious, so it bears mentioning. The one arm is much bigger than the other because one is essentially for ripping
cramp?
And tearing and defense, more or less. And one is for fine work.
Yeah. We can't escape
carcinization. Pre-campaign carcinization. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the left arm is like a spacer build slash heavy armor frame, whereas the right hand is a work enhancement suite for essentially wiring things and whatever. Mm-hmm. So this means that I'm capable of, you know, disassembling or whatever, extracting tech, you know, on the fly in the field. It also means, you know, there's no hiding that I am not usual.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, given even your description of skin tone, it is quite clear that you are bespoke.
Indeed. Very much so. But yeah, no, I mean, I think there's not a ton else mechanically even to talk about, because a bunch of the point spend and stuff was making that work.
Right.
Small local business, Fiddler Crab Arms. Yeah, I think that's most of me. And I have the I know a guy talent, which I'm sure will come up at some point. Nice. But bears mentioning to my other
players. Mechanically, my character is somewhat boring, it feels like. I am a skills monkey who just does hacking. Mm-hmm. And such hacking I does.
Such hacking does you do.
We need a hacker, though. It worked out well.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, that may be something to highlight here, is that Dez is playing hacker, Drew is playing a fixer, Nick is playing an operator, and Robin, I believe you're playing a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have a decent little spread here. That's not accidental either, but those are the occupations, which sort of function as classes, or at least starting classes, in Hardware Island. So that's kind of what everybody's skills are centered around. And then it looks like through either the university or the frontispiece, everybody has connections to Grand Cross Polytechnic, which is in the Selden district of the Turing ward of Grand Cross. There are, I think, 15 total wards inside the cylinder. So a lot of our early action will probably end up centering around this Selden district, where most things are related to G-Pole, and then branch out kind of from there. And learn as we go. In some cases, this will probably lead to some of you knowing other parts of the station better than anybody actually recording, including myself, does. But that's also just fine, because that's what my control F in this PDF is for, is being able to access information while briefly markered out. So yeah, I think we established, and just to kind of clarify, Matchstick, Dez's character, is a student at G-Pole. Kato, Drew's character...
Very dead.
Right. Kato runs a sort of campus-adjacent bookstore. Robin's Cal is in campus security. And then Nick, your Ing, is not directly affiliated with the institution, it sounds like, but is sort of linked through proximity. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think probably audits some classes, and maybe cultivates the assumption that, you know, they just are a student. But it's, you know, I haven't quite settled, but, you know, sure. I have to have some income stream, right, in order to not be at, you know, a higher burden. And so not sure if I've got a part-time or full-time job as a drone operator legally, or if there's something else that you would propose in terms of, you know,
illegal drone having something. Well,
sure. Or even, you know, kind of gray market, or, you know, taking jobs as they come.
A possible dynamic, this is just a pitch, not obviously not set in stone, obviously pending you liking it, but I mean, you get brought to us because you need help as a customer, essentially, and you know, you're also like, I mean, you need a guy. You need you're looking to be involved in a more permanent way because you'd need income stream, and this is obviously a place where you can get illicit parts, jailbreak existing ones, all of that.
It me, yes. I'm the jailbreaker.
Well, that sounds great then. So that leads, I think, naturally, if we're sort of crafting those connections, into the question of community. Now, this is an optional rule in Hardware Island that I think probably we want to make use of. Basically, what this involves is everybody, each player, crafting a resident of this community, which doesn't have to be somebody who lives in a neighborhood, right? Communities could be like a forum online or whatever. But it sounds like we're leaning at least a little bit toward the, you know, sort of neighborhood, or at least connections to a particular place and thing. version here. I think looking at our time, we're not going to be able to craft these residents in real time, but would I be correct in assuming that we're all interested in doing this?
Yeah, oh, yes,
I think absolutely.
So. Okay. Well, so I know that a couple of people already have some NPCs for various reasons kind of sketched out on their character sheet and their background, which is great. But I guess the part that we'll do here is I'll explain a little bit. The residents of a community can essentially be drawn upon by our player characters to help them prepare for or execute a mission. But then each community also has its own burden and advancement. And, you know, depending on how well you manage those things, residents could leave or arrive, or, you know, become better off. So I'll just note here then that for session one, discuss amongst yourselves, think on your own, ask me, you know, this is a community project, quite literally, and we'll introduce some residents in the course of the play in session one that will be mechanically useful, and maybe have a name or designation for our community, even if it is just Jeephole, or you know, our specific neighborhoods and or the frontispiece. We'll kind of decide there. But you know,
I like the idea that being a community that like intersect significantly with but is not itself the university, because like, you know, yeah, like colleges are so full of those,
right,
you know, that move in and out of them, so yeah, I built an NPC, or like, you know, sketched one out, who is a professor at Jeephole, who has a long-standing hatred of Cal's boss, if we're sticking with Lou Tupper, the NPC mentioned in the rule book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that could be some nice connective tissue if it works for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A little drama. Robin, you're smiling wryly.
Okay. I have thoughts on a potential frontispiece coworker.
Ooh, cool.
Who handles sort of the augment and drone, like actual manual, the hardware rather than the software side of things.
That's great, yeah.
Which does leave open sort of the third aspect of this, namely the wetware, which obviously has its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I will discuss this some with you, Drew.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask Adam to intercede at points during my post-credit stuff as a tired coworker. Assigned to try to rein in my wild security updates.
That's good. That's
I
good.
Will do my best to live up to the frankly shining golden promise of that idea.
Let's all bask in the golden promise of it.
Right.
Whatever happens next, we can all just enjoy it now.
So yeah, I look forward to hearing what we all kind of come up with. If there's any sort of collaboration we still want to get on air, so to speak, about how our community might be coming together or what it might be coming together around, then this is the time to pick, to put yourself out there. Any ideas?
To what degree do we want to have this have like an online or digital component as well as just the people who exist in the physical space of the community?
I think an online component would be smart.
Yeah, I mean, given what we do, there's almost certainly people we mostly or even entirely know online
at the yes, hi,
for a start.
Other hackers.
Right? Yeah. Right. So I think that makes a ton of sense. And that's just one example, right? There's a million possibilities there.
I think that it's good to integrate for sure. In my mind, that would probably emotionally take kind of the space of like a town crier. It's like an opportunity to hear something from the outside that's happening for me. And maybe this is too much crossover with the real world, but I connect with people more completely in in-person interactions than I do remotely. And so hearing that somebody is in distress across the, you know, Grand Cross or on Earth or something like that, that's also important and can kind of feed the story, but not might not have the same overall impact as
sort of
in-person residents.
Like a sort of characterization opportunity for people who do exist primarily digitally versus primarily physically.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I really like the counterintuitive, like I'm sure this is not accidental, but that the meatiest one among us is also the one who's the most comfortable right, just existing right. online.
I wouldn't yeah. know yeah. anything about that yeah. sort of intentionality.
I'm calling it out to make sure we're all aware of it.
Nice. Right. Right. Yeah, well, that gives us, I think, a lot to play with. And I think we did a pretty good job of sort of situating our characters and our action kind of within the setting. And I'm 100% certain that even right off the bat in episode one, we'll begin to flesh that out and see some, you know, growth, alteration, you know, some things happen there. But my hope is that listeners hearing this will have kind of an idea of the basis that we're starting out on. So we're almost to the end of my notes for a session zero here.
Excellent.
The thing that I had considered, and I don't know if this will make the air or not, but I need to have, in order for the way that the format works for naming these episodes, it's, you know, decimal episode number, episode title, and then which campaign it's part of. And I had decided on Nightfall for our previous campaign well before anything was recorded. But for this one, I've been really kind of trying to figure out what would make a good name that would kind of cover whichever direction my players went in.
I think actually I will submit my side commentary mm-hmm. message, the people of Jeeple.
I'm going to write it down. It's maybe not quite as brief in terms of character count as I was initially considering, but you know, it is punchy and that's not nothing, and accurate too.
Does what I will on 10.
Yeah, I will submit for consideration the one that I thought was reasonably sort of good and evocative that I had come up with. I have a few others that didn't quite make the cut. Borrowed Light.
Ooh.
That's very good.
I like that, especially because it kind of resonates with Nightfall.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Huh. Yeah. Hmm. Cool. It's also like a thing that physically happens on Grand Cross, right? There's like mirrors to mm-hmm. make an artificial sun. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. It's in conversation with Nightfall. I like that. I like it a lot.
All right. Mm-hmm. If there are any others, I mean, I think we've got the one, which is a suggestion from players, which is great. Anything else that just sort of crosses your mind, given everything that we've talked about today?
Stolen Stars.
Ooh, that's a fun one too.
Void Punks.
Void Punks.
I had something that wasn't that good along the same lines, so I'm going to cross it off my list now. In a perfect world, we would have a couple of episodes in the can before I had to make the call and upload something. Mm. I don't think there's any guarantee that that's going to happen this time. So, you know, last call for anything that particularly is just pressing on the membranes of your soul to be the thing that we call this.
The Robin Hoodlums.
Yes. I veto that name.
Yeah, that's fair.
It had occurred.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, I think the ones already said are good.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. So I feel comfortable saying that we do not have time to get into sort of the play part of all of this. But I do thank our players for taking the time to go through this on air. My hope is that this helps situate our listeners in exactly what's going on, as well as maybe gives a useful example to the internet of a one version of a session zero, in case anybody hasn't heard of the concept before or just hasn't done one before. And, you know, hopefully was useful for our players as well, just to kind of get everything in a row before we start the play proper. Was there anything that we wanted to accomplish this time that we didn't quite get to in going through my outline?
Peeking outside, it's still actually election year here, so if we can do something about that, that'd be nice.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're good.
Yeah. I mean, by the time we finish this, it probably won't be election year anymore.
That's something to look forward to.
So something
special, well, depending.
To think about.
At a minimum, it will be over.
Sure. Review. It's a Yelp review of the United States.
Oh boy.
Well, then I think we can start to wrap up. So I believe that concludes this episode of Dice Punks. Thank you for joining us, and I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, maybe even learned something if you're unfamiliar with the concept, and that everybody who's tuned in will join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on currently co-host and Tumblr, maybe elsewhere by the time you hear this, as at dicepunks. We're thrilled that you're joining us at the beginning of this new campaign. I know we've had a lot of smaller things in between while we all got our ducks in a row and life happened and stuff. We hope you've enjoyed that as well. But I personally am super excited to have gotten to be a player so much, and also to get back into the long haul GM's chair and put my players through the ringer. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. So say goodbye to the kind folks at home, players.
Thanks for listening, and I'm excited to slide definitively back into the player's chair after, you know, ending several worlds and putting some Draculas in people's feeds and all that good stuff. So, looking forward to what's next.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and I am so excited to start this new journey with you all.
Thanks for joining us, folks, and stay tuned for the absolute chaos.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for being here. I, too, am beside myself with excitement, and it's creeping me out a little bit, you know, because he's right there. I'm beside myself.
That was extremely Night Vale, Nick. Nicely done.
Oh, yes.
That was wonderful.
Well, as the poet once said, she thinks she missed the train to Mars. She's out back counting stars. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for an Adam's ad for this very campaign. The songs in this episode, Lithium Twilight and Sprezzatura, are from the Hardwired Island official soundtrack by Neon Shutter. Check it out on Bandcamp, link in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who has appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Matevich, Rhea Erlingsdaughter, and Minerva McKyanda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland with hyphens between those words. Links to system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available for backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks aftershow for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards. In a world that's out of this world, in the far future year of 2020, humanity has built its first permanently inhabited space station, Grand Cross. a metropolis inside an O'Neill cylinder situated at the Earth-Moon-L5 point, Grand Cross is in crisis, only 7 years after its official opening. Corrupt politicians and their corporate overlords are trying to buy humanity's beacon of hope in the stars. But the ordinary citizens of Grand Cross won't take that lying down. In the Selden district of Grand Cross's Turing Ward, around the campus of Grand Cross Polytechnic, four very different people will find common cause to push back against this cabal of capitalist bootlickers, but they won't do it alone. Join Cato, Cal, Matchstick, Ing, and all their friends and neighbors as they fight back the only way they know how, with the power of friendship. And a bunch of cool cybernetic gizmos. Underdogs will rise, probably. Scores will be settled, I think. Dreams will, likely, be shattered. And much, much more, presumably. So join the Dice Punks over the coming months for Borrowed Light, a Hardwired Island actual play campaign, coming to a podcatcher near you, assuming you're close to your phone or computer.